People often wonder about what priests learn in seminary as we're training to be priests, and you might be surprised to find about one of the things that I thought I would learn a lot about, but ended up not knowing a whole lot about, and that's prayer, actually. I'd always prayed, and at the same time, I thought I'd learn a little bit more at seminary, how to really pray. But in the end, I kind of came out about where I started. I learned some things. But I don't know about you, but I you can get this feeling that when you're praying, am I doing this right? I don't know. Do I hear God's voice? And I don't feel God. And there can be times in our prayer where we wonder, what is this all about? And how do I know if I'm making any progress at all in prayer? And what if I'm just messing it all up? What if I kind of felt like that. And I wondered, what's this all about? Well, this past week, I had an opportunity to make my annual retreat as a priest. Now, they actually had to put it into the law of the church that priests have to take a week retreat each year. I guess they felt that priests somehow we get in the habit of saying, well, the work we do is God's work, so we really don't need a break from that, do we? So they had to put it in the law. Priest, you must make a week retreat each year. So I took mine a week ago, and Father Brian's been on his retreat this week. And it's amazing when you go on retreat, and I followed the model of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who actually created a 30-day long retreat. It didn't take him too long before they decided most people don't have 30 days to go away and be on retreat, so they kind of shortened it down to about a week. But the core of it is silent prayer with the scriptures. You spend the week not talking, you meet with a director to go over what's happening in your prayer, then you just pray with the scriptures, at least like 4 one-hour periods a day. And I found that just so comforting. But at the same time, wondering a little bit, I don't know, am I doing it right? And this time on my retreat this year, we actually had a priest that is an expert in the spiritual life come and give us a little conference each morning to talk a little bit about prayer and how to do it. And particularly, as an engineer, I always kind of felt prayer was a little fuzzy, a bit of an enigma. You know, you don't know if you've completed what you kind of started, and if so, what happened. And it's hard to describe. And I, as an engineer, I kind of like equations and stuff that you can have concrete things. Prayer is not really like that. But fortunately, St. Ignatius of Loyola, come to find out in this retreat, actually created 14 rules for prayer. I thought, perfect, like a to-do list, I can figure out how to pray. And it was really helpful. But St. Ignatius, I thought of that today with our first reading, where it talks about that tree. A tree that sometimes gets lots of rain, and it's easy. Its leaves are green, and it just flowers and produces fruit with little effort. But then it speaks of that other situation in which a tree finds itself in a parched and barren land, an empty waste. Ignatius saw that the spiritual life goes through kind of two phases as well, like that. On one hand, he talked about that time of consolation, he calls it. The time when everything seems to be going right. Our prayer is very fruitful. We feel God's presence. When we read the scriptures, they just seem to come alive for us. We very much are alive with the presence of the Holy Spirit. We love coming to Mass. Maybe we even love to pray. And it just, the time seems to fly by when we're praying. That's a beautiful time in our lives. And that Ignatius calls consolation. And he says, when we find ourselves in that state, all we can do is just thank God and accept it and say that it is wonderful. But on the other hand, he says there's also desolation, spiritual desolation, which he simply says is the opposite of everything to do with consolation. He says then that's the time when our prayer seems dry and empty. And we just start to pray and we look at our watch and it's still only 2 minutes after the first five when we looked just a second ago. And that hour of prayer maybe just seems to drag on. We don't feel like coming to Mass. We wonder if God hears us. We wonder if anything is going right or going on. That, Ignatius says, is spiritual desolation. Now, to give you an idea of where the problems are at, Ignatius spends about 2 or 3 rules of the 14 on consolation. The rest of them pretty much have to do with how to deal with spiritual desolation. Because, as you might imagine, that's where we tend to have more problems. Most of us are pretty good at accepting God's consolation when it comes and thanking Him. But we get in a lot of trouble when we find ourselves in that state of desolation. So Ignatius gives a lot of practical hints of how to get through that period. And the first thing he reminds us is that consolation is always a gift from God. But desolation is always the work of the evil spirit. God never sends desolation. He might allow it, as we'll see, for some good reasons, but it's always the work of the evil spirit and must be opposed. I found that very helpful because, I don't know about you, but a lot of times in life when prayer does seem dry, when it seems like I'm in desolation, I'm tempted to think, it must be my fault. I must have done something wrong. And, you know, we all can look at our lives and see our sin, and I'm tempted to think, I've offended God, and that's why God has withdrawn Himself, that it's my fault. Ignatius very wisely counsels against that. He says, especially in time of desolation, that's when the evil spirit is most working and where we most hear His voice instead of the good spirit. And he would have us believe that somehow God is punishing us, and that's why He's withdrawn Himself. Quite the contrary. Ignatius says that there could be a little bit of that, that maybe one of the reasons God could allow desolation is that we've become maybe a little lukewarm and tepid. We maybe have abandoned some of our spiritual fervor and practices that we always used to do. Maybe we gave up and aren't coming to Mass regularly or not making our daily prayers. Ignatius says that even in his own life, when he finds himself in those states, it's like, I thought it better that God not provide consolation, but that rather I might then become aware that maybe I am growing a little lukewarm. Kind of that impetus to say, come back and go deeper. That's one reason. But Ignatius goes on to say, there are two other good reasons why God might allow consolation. One of them is that we need trials and struggle if we're ever going to go beyond just the stage of the spiritual childhood that we might reduce to. You think about it, if everything's going well, we tend to just be happy and stay there. It's precisely when God might allow this desolation that we then start to reach out. God, help me. I can't do this. Why am I like this? Why do I feel this way? I need your help, God. It's precisely at that time where we can start to really realize how much we need God. And what a great gift that is, that if we're open to that and go through that trial with faith, it will actually deepen our faith and bring us out of that spiritual childhood. That beautiful example of our first reading today, what does it say about that tree that finds itself in desolation, but yet is planted by the water? It says, it stretches out its roots to the stream, and then it fears not when the heat comes. Its leaves stay green. In the year of drought, it shows no distress. That time of desolation is what forces that tree to sink its roots deep and reach out for the water. Desolation can do the same thing for us in our spiritual life. That's when we reach out and say, Lord, save me. I can't do this on my own. A very important spiritual insight, which leads to Ignatius' third reason why God might allow desolation. And that is that, kind of the flip side, that when we're in consolation, that somehow we don't think that that's a reward because we're just doing so good. That somehow, look at me, I'm becoming so holy and doing all these great things. That's why God blesses me with these wonderful feelings of consolation. Ignatius says, no, we have to be careful in consolation that we don't get all puffed up and proud about it. It's not a reward any more than desolation is a punishment. God chooses to send consolation when He wills. But then especially when we have that time of consolation, Ignatius says, remember, it won't always be that way. Desolation is sure to follow and consolation sure to follow again after that. Rather, when we're in that time where there's plenty of rain as we speak, we need to store that up, to remember the truths and that experience of God, so that when we're in desolation, we might not be fooled by the enemy who wants to convince us that God is absent, God has abandoned you, to try to get us to doubt all we thought we knew about the faith. Ignatius says, no, when you're in consolation, store that up. Almost put it in a bank account, almost. Store it up in your roots so that when things dry up, it'll be there. And you can remind yourselves, no, God hasn't abandoned me. He's allowed this for my greater good because God loves me even more than I love myself. Finally, Ignatius then counsels, what should we do when we're in desolation? How do we fight and attack the evil one? He says one very important rule. When we're in desolation, make no changes to our spiritual commitments. Make no changes to our spiritual commitments that we had before the desolation. I'll give you an example. How many times, you know, our prayer is great, we commit to making an hour in the Adoration Chapel each week. But then desolation starts to set in. We don't recognize Jesus. He feels absent. Maybe we then are tempted to say, you know, this holy hour thing isn't working anymore. I'm going to try something else. Ignatius says, no. That's precisely what the evil one wants us to do. Rather, it's at that time we have to be committed. Say, no, I'm going to make my holy hour no matter what, because that's what I was committed to before this desolation began. Like going to Mass. People often come in frustrated that they think they've sinned because I just don't seem to get anything out of Mass right now. It seems dull and I don't even feel worthy to be here. It's precisely then when Ignatius says, don't abandon our spiritual commitments. Be strong and firm in the trial, knowing that it will pass, that it's temporary. One of his other rules speaks about the fact that the evil one always tries to make us feel like the desolation will go on forever. And even to reinterpret the past, to help us doubt what we thought we knew. You didn't really experience God's consolation, did you? You were just imagining that. This is the way life really is. There's not God, and he's never going to be there. That's the work of the evil spirit we have to resist. Finally, Ignatius gives a few examples of parables, sort of. And in one, he wants us to know what the evil spirit is up to. If we can know his plan, then when we see it, we can have courage to fight and struggle against it. So he says that the evil spirit, it's like a leader of a band of brigands that comes to attack a city. And he just wants to steal and rob. So it's not an honorable leader. But you can picture in Ignatius's day, the city on a hill with walls all around it and towers and a bridge to close the door. Ignatius says that the evil one is like a leader of a band of brigands who they come and they set up their camp outside the wall, far out of the range of the weapons. But then there is this scout party that goes out. And the scout party rides around the walls. They notice the towers, looking at the fortifications, looking to see, aha, there's a place where the stones in the wall seem to be kind of crumbling. Or that door isn't very well fortified, is it? He's looking for a weakness. Ignatius says this is exactly what the evil spirit does to us. Because when he finds the weakness, that is precisely the place where the attack will begin. So we, before the evil one gets there, says need to be like, what if the town people instead went out themselves once a year or so and rode around their own walls and said, hey, look, those stones are falling down. Let's repair them. And they fix it up and fortify the city. Now when the enemy comes, he rides around the wall looking for a weak point, and he finds none. He'll either have to decide he's going to attack against a well-fortified city, or more likely, he'll have to withdraw. Ignatius reminds us that the devil is fundamentally weak. He's not nearly as powerful as we allow him to be in our minds, thinking, you can't do it, you're never going to come out of this sin. Ignatius says, no, the devil is very weak. In fact, if we resist him at the beginning, he'll take flight in fear. It's like a snowball starting at the top of a mountain. When it's just beginning, if we act immediately, we could stop it with a finger. But if we allow it to keep going, we give in to the initial temptation, and we allow the devil an entrance into our city, then all of a sudden it gets going and like a big snowball turns into an avalanche and it becomes very difficult to stop. So Ignatius says, let's be prepared. Let's go around the outside of our city. Find where our souls are weak. If we have to keep calm and we confess the same sin every time, saying, I always do this. That's not bad. We all have our weakness. We just need to be smart and say, what can I do to fortify that? How do I act to build that up? Ignatius says, pray, ask God for help, examine well your life, find out what led to this desolation, but then do a suitable penance, like adding a few minutes to your holy hour if you're tempted to cut it short. If you're weak in one area, find a corresponding little penance. It doesn't have to be big, but just so you act affirmatively against the evil one, and then not just that we beat him, but that we totally throw him off, utterly defeated. That's really what Jesus points to in our gospel today. If we are able to have that kind of knowledge of consolation and desolation, then we can be happy and at peace in all circumstances. That's how Jesus can say, blessed are you when people hate you. Rich are you when you're poor. Full and satisfied are you when you're hungry. They seem like paradoxes, but if we're like that tree by the stream that sinks our roots deep, if we know how to live in consolation and desolation with our trust set in God, then we can be blessed in any situation. That's the great gift of knowing how to pray and knowing what the evil one is up to and trusting in our Heavenly Father. This season of Lent is a time in which we kind of voluntarily enter into a little desolation. We fast. Maybe we add some prayers. We build up our fortifications against our weaknesses. If we do that, in the end, the devil takes flight, is repelled, weakened, and we grow out of our spiritual childhood, and we file that away for the future to say, God got me through that. If I can conquer this, I can conquer maybe more things with God's help. We can truly be blessed, no matter what comes in our life. And for that, we thank God that He is always with us, no matter what it feels like, no matter how absent He seems. Let us reflect on the truth that God is always there. If we remember that, we will indeed be blessed, both in this life and forever in heaven.